Good morning. Today is Friday, May 19th, 2017. My name is Vilma Howard, and I am here again to read to you from the Pantograph. And starting off today in our sports section, Joe Madden credits starters for Cubs bats. Out of Chicago, the Cubs are starting to show the pop that helped propel them to their first championship in 108 years. For that, manager Joe Madden credited their starting pitching. Javier Baez hit a grand slam. Chris Bryant homered, and the Cubs beat the Cincinnati Reds 9-5 Thursday to complete a three-game sweep. Starting, pitching drives the engine, Madden said. I will never be deceived by that thought. While that's happening, you have a chance to hit better by just keeping the other team down. Guys get a chance to get in the flow and do their thing. Chicago outscored Cincinnati 25-15 in the series after struggling at the plate for much of this season. The Cubs have 23 wins in their last 28 games against the Reds. Baez came through with a three-hit and season-high 5 RBI. He got the rout going when he capped a 5-run first inning against Amir Garrett with his third career slam. Bryant hit his eighth homer this season in the fourth, along with a solo drive to center, and the Cubs scored three in the fifth to take a 9-0 lead. John Lester followed up solid starts from Lackey and Kyle Hendricks by allowing 3 runs and 6 hits in 6-plus innings. He improved to 11-0 in his last 15 regular season starts. Lester left with 9-1 lead after giving up singles to José Pereza, Tucker, Barnhart, and Arizmendi Alcántara in the seventh. We're trending in the right direction, which is good, Lester said. Cincinnati has lost 6 straight, its longest skid since dropping 11 in a row last May. Recalled from AAA Louisville, Garrett gave up 6 runs and 5 hits in 4 innings. He walked 4, 3 in the first inning. We didn't throw strikes here, manager Brian Price said. This was not a series where we did what we were capable of doing as a staff. We didn't throw enough strikes, and it exemplifies the problem. Chicago's Koji Uehara got his first save this season after he entered with bases loaded and no outs in the ninth. He retired Adam Duvall on a sacrifice fly, then struck out Eugenio Suarez and Stuart Turner on both 3 pitches. Even after viewing video and still photos from Major League Baseball, Price still was not convinced Votto should not have been ruled out at first replay review that ended Wednesday's 7-5 loss. I think we're going to make this as good of a system as possible. You have to be able to give the team that's wrong side of the call clarity that allows us to go, hey, they got the call right. We'll live with that, Price said. With 2 outs in the ninth on Wednesday, Votto hit a grounder up the middle that shortstop Addison Russell fielded the other side of second base. Anthony Rizzo had to stretch as far as he could to bring in the throw. Votto was ruled safe by the first base umpire, Ed Hickox, but the Cubs challenged the call and won. And now moving to the next article, the Flex win opener on China Tour. The last time the Bloomington Flex played nearly 2 years ago, they lost 81-80 to Cuban national team wrap up their 2000 tour of the China Conference. Wednesday night with their former University of Illinois star Dee Brown as head coach. The Flex opened their 2017 Chinese tour with 87-83 win over the Serbian national team in Yuzhong City. With the game tied at 57 after 3 quarters, the Flex Chris McLellan sparked a 3-0 run in the fourth quarter to give his team a lead for good. McLellan hit a 15-footer jumper from the wing and then found Aaron Reaver for an alley-oop that brought the capacity crowd to its feet. The Flex up the lead to 80-66 en route to the win. "We'll get better," said Coach D. Brown, former Illinois basketball player, who coached the Flex against live competition for the first time. "It was our first game together, and the guys are just getting used to each other. It's a process, and we will learn more about each other as the tour continues." Crandall Head, who played 55 games for Illinois from 2010 to 2014, led the team with 18 points. And seven-footer Mike Thorne, who played 32 games for Illinois from 2015 to 2017, added 14. The Flex continue their tour late Thursday night against the Nigerian national team in Lantern City. And moving on to the next article. An event gives visitors a taste of business. Out of normal, the Radisson Hotel won't be opening for a couple more weeks. But people got a taste of what will be offered there during the McLean County Chamber of Commerce Twin City Showcase. The Radisson was among 90 businesses and 13 restaurants taking part in the business trade show at Illinois State University Bone Student Center on Thursday. Mallory Browning, senior sales manager for the hotel at 8 Traders Circle, said participating in the showcase helps the hotel gain exposure and show we are part of the community. She said it is also an opportunity to be sure we are building relationships. Executive Chief Richard Lozada kept busy offering people cheese balls with a choice of 4 different sauces or butter to dip or bread. Lozada is excited about the opening on June 7th and welcomed the opportunity to introduce ourselves to the community and get people to know us. He said the restaurant intends to partner with farmers in Bloomington Normal area, include local produce in its dishes. The many restaurants and caterers offering free taste were clearly popular among people attending the showcase. But restaurants weren't the only business offering a taste of their product or service. SmartPath Education Technology Services, which offers team-building exercises, had a small mock-up of an Escape Bloomington room where people had 10 minutes inside a walled-off morgue to escape by solving a mystery through puzzles and clues. Alicia Wheeler, operations manager, said the escape room program usually lasts 60 minutes. The company has both corporate customers who send groups of employees as well as people who come with friends for fun. "All of our rooms are designed to make you focus on communication, collaboration, and problem solving," said Wheeler. The 10-minute version gives them a great idea of how fun and engaging it can be, she said. First-timer Alexis Scoggin of Normal said, "I like that they had a simulation. It's good for someone like me who hasn't done it before." But Danielle Scarf of Normal, who has participated in full-length version, added, "It's a lot more fun with more people. You get to see their strength and leadership." Chamber CEO Charlie Moore said one of the biggest challenges for businesses of any type is for people to know who they are. The showcase gives people a chance to meet face-to-face and build a relationship and establish rapport, he said. All exhibitors must be members of the chamber, but the event is open to the public. Participating businesses covered a broad spectrum from the hospitality, entertainment, and financial industries to technology, information, and transportation companies. Lily Stufflebean of Normal tries to come every year and said, "It's interesting to see all the different companies and what services they offer." The State Farm, the main sponsor of the Twin City Showcase, and Hy-Vee, the main sponsor of the Taste Showcase, are honored to offer the event every year. And now, moving on to the next article, Roger Ailes dies at 77. Roger Ailes, the communications maestro, who transformed television news and America's political conversation by creating a ruling Fox News channel for 2 decades before being ousted last year for alleged sexual harassment, died Thursday, according to his wife, Elizabeth Ailes. He was 77. A former GOP operative to candidates including Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, and George H.W. Bush, and a one-time advisor to President Donald Trump, Ailes displayed a mastery of modern messaging early in his career. Then he changed the face of the 24-hour news when in 1996 he accepted a challenge from media titan Rupert Murdoch to build a news network from scratch to compete with CNN and other TV outlets they deemed left-leaning. That October, Ailes flipped the switch on Fox News Channel, which within a few years became the audience leader in cable news. Ailes branded the network fair and balanced, and declared he had left the political world behind. But conservative viewers found a home and lifted primetime commentators Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity to the top of the news rating. He has dramatically and forever changed the political and media landscape single-handedly for the better, Hannity tweeted on Thursday. Fox News and 21st Century Fox executive Chairman Rupert Murdoch called Ailes a brilliant broadcaster who played a huge role in shaping America's media over the last 30 years in a statement. He will be remembered by the many people on both sides of the camera that he discovered, nurtured, and promoted, Murdoch said. Roger and I shared a big idea, which he executed in a way no one else could have. In addition, Roger was a great patriot who never ceased fighting for his beliefs. Others laid the nation's political dysfunction and inability to find common ground at his feet, creating the atmosphere for Trump to succeed. It's a very complicated story, said Gabrielle Sherman, author of the Ailes biography. The loudest voice in the room, he is in some ways a genius and in some ways tragic. His quest for power consumed him. By mid-2016, Ailes ruled supreme as he prepared to celebrate Fox's 20th anniversary. But in little more than 2 weeks, both his legacy and job unraveled following allegations by a former anchor that he forced her out of Fox News after she spurned his sexual advances. The lawsuit filed on July 6 by Gretchen Carlson quickly triggered accounts from more than 20 women with similar stories of alleged harassment by Ailes, either against themselves or someone they knew. Reportedly, a key witness was Megyn Kelly, the network's superstar personality, whose voice was conspicuously missing in the choir of women and men at Fox News who spoke up on behalf of Ailes. Their defense did little to staunch the widening scandal. Despite Ailes' staunch denials, the 21st Century Fox corporate head, Rupert Murdoch, and his sons James and Lachlan determined that Ailes had to go. The announcement was made July 21st. The allegations went beyond just Ailes. In April, reports that the network has settled lawsuits with 5 women who allege sexual harassment against the network Bill O'Reilly led to his firing. 3 other executives also lost their jobs. Rumors of sexual improprieties at Fox, and by Ailes in particular, weren't new. Sherman's 2014 biography reported numerous unflattering anecdotes, including an allegation, denied by Ailes, that he offered one female employee extra money if she would have sex with him. Before Carlson's bombshell legal action, Fox's roaring success and enormous earnings, with some estimates that it accounted for nearly a quarter of the parents' profits, insulated Ailes from any suspicions as well as from his past scrapes with Murdoch's son over who he would report to. And moving on to the next article, the EU fines Facebook over info. The European Union has fined Facebook 110 million euros. That's 122 million. For providing misleading information over its buyout of the mobile messaging service WhatsApp. The European Commission said Thursday that when Facebook informed it of the 2014 takeover, it said it would be unable to establish reliable automated machine between Facebook and WhatsApp user accounts. But the Commission says that in 2016, WhatsApp offered updates including the possibility of linking user phone numbers with Facebook user IDs. Competition Commissioner Marguerite Vester said the fine is proportionate and serves a deterrent to other companies. She said the commission must be able to take and make decisions about the mergers, effects on competition, and full knowledge of accurate facts. Facebook said in a statement that it acted in good faith throughout the EU office and sought to provide accurate information at every turn. It added that the errors were made in 2014 filings and they were not intentional. And now, a break to go over the. Starting off, we lost Delbert Whitett. Out of Normal, Delbert R. Whitett, 98, passed away at the Advocate Brohim Medical Center in Normal. Wilma Woolard, out of Savoy. Wilma Lee Woolard, 93 years old, of Savoy, was reunited with her husband Ralph on Tuesday at the Willard in Savoy. And Dylan Childs, out of Bloomington. Dylan M. Childs, only 11 years old, of Bloomington, died at 8:29 p.m. at his home. And now moving on to the next article, Living Life with Lactose Intolerance. People with lactose intolerance are unable to fully digest the sugar, or lactose, in milk. As a result, they have diarrhea, gas, and bloating after eating or drinking dairy products. The condition, which is also called lactose malabsorption, is usually harmless, but its symptoms can be uncomfortable. A deficiency of lactase, an enzyme produced in your small intestines, is usually responsible for lactose intolerance. Many people who have low levels of lactase but are able to digest milk products without problems. If you're actually lactose intolerant, though, your lactase deficiency leads to symptoms after you eat dairy products. Most people with lactose intolerance can manage the condition without having to give up dairy foods. With some trial and error, you may be able to predict your body's response to different foods containing lactose and figure out how much you can eat or drink without discomfort. A few people have had such severe lactose intolerance that they cut out milk or dairy products altogether and be wary of non-dairy or foods medications that contain lactose. The signs and symptoms of lactose intolerance usually begin 30 minutes to 2 hours after eating or drinking foods that contain lactose. Common signs and symptoms include diarrhea, nausea, and sometimes vomiting, abdominal cramps, bloating, and gas. Ways to change your diet to minimize symptoms of lactose include limit your dairy products. Most people with lactose intolerance can enjoy some milk products without symptoms. It may be possible to increase your tolerance to dairy products by gradually introducing them into your diet. Some people can find that they can tolerate full-fat dairy products such as whole milk and cheese more easily than dairy products with no or reduced fat. Choosing smaller dairy servings. Sip small servings of milk, up to 4 ounces, that's 118 millimeters, at a time. The smaller the serving, the less likely it is to cause gastrointestinal problems. Saving milk for mealtimes. Drink milk with other foods. This allows the digestive process and may lessen symptoms of lactose intolerance. Experimenting with an assortment of dairy products. Not all dairy products have the same amount of lactose. Buying lactose-reduced or lactose-free products. You can find these products at most supermarkets in the refrigerated dairy section. And lastly, using lactose enzyme tablets or drops. Over-the-counter tablets or drops contain the lactase enzyme. Dairy Ease, Lactaid, and others may help you digest dairy products. You can take tablets just before a meal or snack, or drops can be added to a carton of milk. And now moving on to the next article. The link between suicide genetics. Question. Why does it seem that suicide tends to run in families? Does it have anything to do with genetics? The association between genetics and suicide is complicated. Research has shown that there is a genetic component to suicide, but it is only one of many factors that may raise an individual's risk. Even if someone is at high risk for suicide, that doesn't predict whether or not an individual will actually act on suicidal thoughts. Genetic research, including studies involving twins, has revealed that many psychiatric conditions, including having suicidal tendencies, are influenced by genetics. While studies demonstrate that specific genes, such as one called BDNF, Metella, can increase risk for suicides, it's more likely that a range of gene affects connections and pathways within the brain and impact suicidal risk. Complicating matters further, a process called epigenetics also comes into play when considering the effect of genes on suicide. This process controls when certain genes are turned on or off as a person grows and develops, and it can be influenced by what happens in a person's environment. For example, if someone goes through a difficult event as a child, that experience could have an impact on how or when the gene is activated within a person's brain. Researchers speculate that a negative experience influencing epigenetics is in a person who has a family history of suicide could further compound that person's suicide risk. In addition, it is known that 90% of people who die by suicides have a psychiatric illness at the time of death. Mood disorders, psychotic disorders, and certain personality disorders, and substance use disorders can increase suicide risk substantially. Each of those disorders has a genetic component too. It's important to understand, however, that an increased suicide risk does not predict who will commit suicide. For some people, even those whose genetics may seem to predispose them to a higher risk of suicide, the thought of suicide doesn't enter their minds. For others, suicide quickly may become a focus of their thoughts. For those whose thoughts do turn to suicide, the way they arrive at suicidal thoughts may be a well-imprinted and familiar pathway. Psychotropic treatment can help examine the process they go through to get to that point and find ways to interrupt the process. Genetics, family history, and environment all matter when it comes to the risk of suicide. But knowing risk factors is not a substitute for thorough assessment of an individual's situation and the process he or she takes to arrive at a suicidal thought. If you have a loved one who are you concerned about or your risk of suicide, or if you have suicidal thoughts, talk to a mental health professional. If you are a suicide crisis or emotional distress, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline provides free, confidential emotional support 24/7 at 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255, and that's toll free. And moving on to another article, soccer could cause concussion. A question. My husband, who played in a weekend soccer league, is troubled by some new reports he has read that suggest that soccer might be as dangerous as football. Your husband may be referring to a pair of studies published in February that examined the potential risk of heading the ball, a common move in soccer. One study conducted at a British university found signs of brain damage in a group of professional soccer players, all whom had decades-long careers. The other study, published by researchers at Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York, focused on amateur players. The study found an increased risk of concussion both from hitting the ball and from accidental contact during the game. But before you insist that your husband turns in his cleats, let's take a closer look at the data. The British study examined 14 retired soccer players from dementia. The men skilled at heading the ball played for an average of 26 years each, with the brain tissue of 6 of the players was examined after their death. Researchers found signs of trauma. In 4 of the 6 brains, this includes chronic traumatic and CTE, progressive degenerative disease also found in professional boxers, football players, and hockey players. Although the small sample size of the British study kept researchers from drawing conclusions, they agreed the result needs for large-scale studies. And in the American study, researchers followed 222 amateur soccer players, both men and women. Players reported how often they head the ball, as well as any accidental blows to the head during play. They also rated the severity of the symptoms, like headache, dizziness, altered vision, weakness, or confusion, which can indicate concussion. The researchers concluded that while heading the ball increased players' risk of concussive impact, accidental contact, like an elbow to the head or colliding with another player, was even more common. Research into sports-related concussions has previously focused on football, hockey, and where bruising impacts are part of the game. Now scientists are expanding their inquiries into soccer. Soccer is the world's most popular team sport. It is estimated that amateur players head the ball up to 12 times per game. And in practice drills, this can add up to 2,000 headers over 20 years. The question is now whether the effect of all those headers on the delicate structure of the brain can be cumulative. For the authors of the American study, answer was yes. The recommendation that players be aware of any concussion symptoms, even absent of a conclusive concussion diagnosis, should symptoms appear, players must avoid other collision and following in the next weeks, when the risk of another concussion spikes significantly. The truth is, all physical activities carries both risks and benefits. One thing we discuss with our patients regarding soccer is the risk of knee injury, given the high lateral impact force. It sounds as though your husband is staying abreast of at least the latest research, which is wise. He could use it in deciding how, or even whether, he decides to play soccer in the future. In the next article, a health and wellness expo will take place from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and 8 a.m. to noon on Sunday at St. John's Lutheran Church, 1617 East Emerson Street in Bloomington. Saturday's schedule includes a Red Cross blood drive from 8 a.m. to noon, a yoga class at 11, and blessings of bikes and trikes at 1 p.m. Presentations by medical professionals will deal with memory loss and dementia at 10:30, hearing loss and coherent implants at 1 p.m., depression and anxiety at 2, addiction at 3, sleep at 3:30, diabetes at 3:30 also. As psychologist at 4 p.m. and blood pressure screening at 4 p.m. also. Sunday's schedule includes prayer at 9 a.m., blood pressure screening at 9:30, sleep at 10 a.m., dental implants and gum disease at 10 a.m., healthy eating for diabetes at 10:30, and back to yoga at 11, mindful eating at 11 as well, and an advanced directive at 11 a.m. More information is available at www.stjohnsbloomington.org or 309-827-6121. That's www.stjohnsbloomington.org, 309-827-6121, extension 214. That concludes my reading for the day. Thank you all for listening on this Friday, May 19th, 2017. My name is Vilma Howard. Have a blessed and wonderful day.